Hi, I'm Beda Hill, and this is the D Word podcast, where we talk dementia. Good to be back with another D Word podcast. My guest this week is Steve Sargent, author of Brain Health Protocol and Alzheimer's Defense. Life changed for Steve in 2010 when his father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and he's been on a learning curve ever since.
Well, my father passed away with Alzheimer's in 2010, and also a couple of his sisters had Alzheimer's. Didn't really hit me until he had it that, okay, this thing may be genetic, so I need to start looking into it. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know anything about it. I was a blank slate as far as Alzheimer's knowledge was concerned. So I started about 2010 looking into it and said, okay, what do I need to do to make sure this doesn't hit me? So I started looking into it. Of course, you know, by that time we had everything on the internet, do a lot of studying. There's a lot of information coming out of India on Alzheimer's. Tremendous amount of information. And it's stuff that our doctors over here are not doing. So started looking into it, and a lot of the Indian doctors were saying, number one, you need to exercise. Well, I was doing that. Okay. I was already, you know, gym all the time, gym every day. Certain foods that you needed to eat. They were touting, you know, getting off of sugars and things like that. Some certain herbs, roots, minerals, things like that. And I looked at the list that was already out there, and I said, you know, yeah, I'm already doing a lot of this. But a lot of I did notice that a lot of the information that was out there, it was admittedly still under observation. So that led me to believe that, okay, there's some more information here. They don't seem really certain about a lot of this, some of it. The exercise was a bullet. Okay. This is an absolute. Okay. So I was happy about that. So I started looking into it more, and I just over the course of the last 13 years, I've just continued looking into it, and it's a broad subject. It's such a broad subject, and you start on one idea, and then you run down this rabbit hole. And I mentioned it in the book. The term rabbit hole is probably an overused term, but when it comes to studying all of the different areas that there are to study about Alzheimer's, yeah, you're running down rabbit holes, and you're running pretty deep. There's a lot of things. So, yeah, that's how I got started. And I learned a lot, and still learning. I'm still learning things. I'm still picking things up. I was unfortunate. I picked up something that now since I actually put the book out, something about fluoride that I didn't put in the book, and I was going, I really wish I'd have put that in the book. but it's okay. Maybe I'll do a revision.
Yeah, it sounds like volume two is already calling, Steve.
Yeah, it is. I'm planning on another one and calling it Body Health Protocol. So it'll be more about the whole organism, the entire organism. Yeah, but for now, just got this one out there, trying to promote this one, and get it out in the market. Right now, it's just on Amazon. It's in paperback and also ebook. But I'm about to put it out on some other platforms, some other marketplaces, internet marketplaces, and it's on Amazon in the UK. Amazon UK, it's out there, so you folks can get a hold of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very steep learning curve, isn't it? And I guess when, you know, when we're looking at Dr. Google, as I call it, one of the major things to be able to do is sort out the stuff that's important and the stuff that isn't.
Oh, yeah, it is. And it, there's been a, well, not, it's not recent, but it's fairly recent, that, and it's Startup Hornet's Nest, that it's becoming more and more well known that doctors are finding that the long held culprit of plaques in the brain are not the culprit. That's actually a product of Alzheimer's. It's not a cause of. Now the doctors are kind of backpedaling because they stayed on that for so long. They stayed on the plaques for so long, and they wouldn't look at anything else. But that's the way medical science is. Like I said, they find a rabbit hole to go down. They go down that rabbit hole, and they don't come back, and they don't look at anything else for, you know, for, I don't know, it could be decades, you know. But now they're finding other things. More research is finding other things that it could be. Now it's sugars. Sugars are an enormous contributing factor. Not just sugar, table sugar, but anything that will turn to sugar in the liver or turn to glucose in the liver, which is carbohydrates. So now that's leading more and more people to nutrition regimens like keto and carnivore. It's leading more doctors to recommend that. You know, it's okay. You got to get off this bread and this, you know, potatoes and rice and all this, telling their patients that they need to get off of those things because their A1Cs are too high and they're pre-diabetic. And wow, diabetics are six times more likely to have Alzheimer's than non-diabetics, you know. So that's indicative, you know. Okay, so if you get off of the carbohydrates and the sugars, you're much less likely to have cognitive dysfunction.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You're in tune with the D Word podcast. Well, my guest this week is Steve Sargent, author of Brain Health Protocol and Alzheimer's Defense.
Yeah, and that's an increase too, by the way. That's an increase over the previous, I don't know, you know, 20 years or so. Prior to that, it was not a bother. It's not a bother. Nutrition, no. We're here to fix problems. We're not here to prevent problems. You know, well, I mean, geez, if if you can prevent the problem in the first place, you know, then you don't have a problem. But then the doctor doesn't have a customer. You know, that's the way I see it. I mean, I've met some good doctors. And by and large, they are. I think it's they're good guys, and they probably don't give it a thought that okay, there's a prevention to what I'm doing. But the science of medicine as a whole, their modus operandi is not to prevent people from getting sick. It's to sell drugs and sell procedures to fix people temporarily. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, this concept in chapter one of adopting a warrior mentality or a warrior mindset. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, having a military background and being a gym rat, it just kind of goes with that territory to think of things that way. And you know, when you have that warrior mindset, you're ready to adapt. It's a whatever it takes attitude. It's because, like I also say in the book, I've talked to a lot of people over the years about losing weight and about lowering their. You know, people hate it when I say this. I get so many comments when I say this, but you can take yourself. If you have type 2 diabetes, a person who has type 2 diabetes can get off of insulin. Okay. They absolutely can. It's been done many, many, many times. And people harangue me when I say that. So you're going to kill somebody. No, it's just, you know, if you think that, just keep taking the insulin and don't worry about it, you know. But if you take the approach, you can bring yourself off of insulin slowly. Okay. You can't just cold turkey drop insulin. But if you keep doing your testing and make sure that your glycine level is where it's supposed to be, you lower your carbohydrate intake. Yes, your sugar is going to stay where it needs without the use of insulin. And that's, like I said, I'm kind of going off on a side note here, but with the warrior mindset, though, you have to take that mindset that you have to adapt. And that's the thing, is a lot of people are not prepared to make adaptations in their lives. They're on these, you know, they're addicted to certain foods and they don't want to adapt, or they're not active. You know, they can't seem to get into an active lifestyle. They can't, they can't just start going for a walk. They have difficulty with that. They can't imagine themselves going to a gym. Yeah. So a lot of what I've got in the book is psychology as much as it is practical application. You know, it's like there's a mindset here. You have to adapt to possibly a brand new lifestyle if you want to prevent bad things from happening to you, whether it's Alzheimer's, whether it's you know, gout, liver disease, there's many things that come from living the wrong lifestyle or living an unhealthy lifestyle. You know?
Yeah.
So it's about adaptation mostly.
Hmm. You've hit something that, you know, as soon as I read through the book, I've got a little note at the bottom here that says it's, you know, it's our whole lifestyle approach, because it's almost like years of learning of things. We're kind of programmed to believe certain things, aren't we? And it's kind of almost a case of turning them on their head and starting a new approach here.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, I've been living this way for so long that it's difficult for me to imagine somebody not living that way. So, but I have to remind myself, wait a minute. There are people who don't go to the gym every day. There are people who, you know, who eat all day long. There are people who snack. You know, I eat one time a day. It's called one. It's a thing. It's a plan. It's called one meal a day. Now, I haven't always done that, but I have always, monitored what I ate. And then I discovered that what you eat is important, but also when you eat is important. You know, it's important to give your body a break from food. There's a process in your body, it's called autophagy. And that is when your body eats weak cells. And autophagy does not happen unless you starve it a little bit. Okay. It starve to death. You just got to starve your body a little bit. You know, if you're eating all the time, there is no autophagy. So you've got old cell on top of old cell on top of old cell on top of old cell. It's just building up. Okay. So if you just eat one time a day instead of twice or three times a day. And that's in the book. You saw that. You will be in a state of autophagy all day long, pretty much. And that's, yeah, and your body doesn't get into, eating the good cells, the good muscles. It eats the weaker, most of the weaker cells throughout your body, muscles, fat, and elsewhere. It just eats the weak cells, the dead cells that need to be gone. It's a cleaning. It's a total cleaning. I mean, you can read virtually any religious manuscript, and there is fasting, and most people take that to be a spiritual thing, and it is. But it's also a physical cleansing. There's a reason why all. I don't know of a religion, and I've studied several. I don't know of a religion that did not practice fasting, and that is one of the reasons why. It's a total cleansing of the body, mind, and the spirit. And if you just fast 24 hours, you're improving your longevity. You know, sugar's poison. It's just straight up poison. You know, it tastes great, but so does, you know, I compare it to antifreeze. You know, I'm told that antifreeze tastes good too. but you know, you won't drink antifreeze. You know, I've never tasted antifreeze, but I have been told by some people who would probably know that, yeah, antifreeze tastes great. Just don't drink much of it. Yeah, it's poison. It's a long range killer. So you just simply do not need sugar at all, ever. You know, there's no point in your life when you need sugar, and it, just get rid of it. Yeah, and that's a hard thing for a lot of people to do. And there are a lot of good sugar substitutes. And you know, I had a lady yesterday. We were chatting on Twitter. I had put a recipe for a cheesecake on for a keto cheesecake on Twitter, and it includes Splenda, the sweetener Splenda. But I tell folks you can use Splenda, you can use Stevia or Truvia. Those are three artificial sweeteners that are naturally derived. And this one lady, she commented that, hasn't Splenda been shown to disrupt the gut biome? And I saw the study on that and did some research, and went back and did a little research on it. The company that was commissioned to do the study, and this was the only study that found this in Splenda, was the company that manufactures NutraSweet. It was their rival, their industrial rival, that market rival. So, you know, naturally, yeah, they're looking for something, and even if they've got to fabricate, yeah, they're going to come up with something. But there were no other studies that said anything negative about Splenda. It was just that one from NutraSweet. NutraSweet. I forget the active chemical in NutraSweet, but yeah, it's the company that manufactures that the NutraSweet and its active chemical. So yeah, that's the only place that it comes from. But yeah, you're safe though using those three.
Yeah, I think it demonstrates just how much of a minefield all this is, doesn't it, really? And also the other thing in the book, I mean, in that chapter 5, it talks about sugar, is that a lot of the concepts that we are taught when we are perhaps younger are kind of boiled down not to be true. And I mean, you use the example of bananas. I'm a big tennis fan, okay? And you see at the break in the tennis match, don't you? There's people, tennis players, Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray, whoever, kind of chomping on a banana. Right. It's a good source of potassium. But, you know, you turn it on its head a bit, don't you? And say, well, really, maybe it's not as good as you think it is.
No, it's not, because there's so much sugar in there. And here's the thing. The thing about it is my grandfather was a farmer, okay? He spent all day long. Now, he was an old-school farmer, okay? One of those that walked behind a mule, okay? And he walked behind a mule all day. Now, he was a hard man, okay? I remember him. He died when I was 12 years old, so I remember him well. And he was a hard man. He was thin. He was tall. And he was just hard as a rock at 82 years old. But he walked behind a mule every day of his life. And he ate some of the most, biscuits and gravy and corn and things like that. And, you know, these are things that I won't touch. His lifestyle was entirely different from our lifestyles today. This is somebody who's literally in the gym all day long. And that's part of it. But here's the other part of it. His farming was entirely different from the farming that is done today, because today there are insecticides, which are toxic, but there are also, and this is the killer, glyphosates, which are in the Roundup weed killer. And what glyphosates do is they go on the plant. Of course, they keep they don't kill the plants, the GMO plants that have been laboratory adapted to not be subjected to the weed killer. All the other weeds are killed. Goes down into the ground. It binds to all the metals, the minerals that are in the ground, and it won't allow those minerals to go into the plant. Okay. So if it doesn't go into the plant, then we're not getting those minerals. And that's where we're supposed to get our minerals, is from the dirt. So we're not getting the same minerals today in our food that people were getting, even 70 or 80 years ago. You know, so the food's not quite the same. You know, not only that, but then also it's a different lifestyle today. I mean, like I say, we don't go out and walk behind a mule. We don't walk. Kids don't walk to school anymore, which they did. My parents walked to and from school. Kids don't do that now. You know, people cut trees down with an axe at one time. You know, now it's done with a machine. You know, there's just so many things that we're just not as active. So we have to purpose ourselves to be active in order to maintain the type of exercise, to have the type of exercise that is really required by our bodies.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You're in tune with the D Word podcast and my guest Steve Sargent, author of Brain Health Protocol and Alzheimer's Defense.
Sometimes I think all this, these things that were created to make our lives more simple have actually made them more busy. You know, yeah, I don't know. I go to countries to visit now, into the rural areas like Thailand, for example, or the Philippines. And the people there, they live very simple lives, and they don't live the same way we live, but they know their neighbors. They have leisure time. you know, they're not in such a frenzy. And, you know, that's after living in America, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK, where things are just – we live at a frenzied pace here. It's just go, go, go all the time here. You know? But then when you go to a country where people live more like my grandparents lived, things are just entirely different, you know, and they're more relaxed, they're more friendly, they're like I say, they know the people around them, all the people down the street. And things are just different. I tend to think that's better for the mental health.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a big area in, as well in terms of dementia. I mean, do you feel now we're actually looking at things like brain health, et cetera? Because previously, most of the headlines we had here in the UK about searching for a cure and not actually about searching for the causative factors. I talked to quite a lot of researchers, and it does seem that's changing around a little bit now, and people are beginning to have more interest in the causative factors.
I think it is. Yeah, but I think that's driven by so many people like you and me, and others like us. There are a lot of people. I'll tell you what, social media has moved a lot of that. Yeah, because now you've got people who can get together on social media, just like we've done, discuss these things, and push the other end, not having to wait for medical science to, fish around and try to find something. People are doing their own research. You know, people are trying things, people are. Looking at other countries, you know, looking at seeing what other countries are doing. Like I say, if you dig a little bit, Indian doctors are way ahead on this, you know. I think it's important. I would like to see Western medicine take a turn to the East, because I think they're, you know, they've been on. They've been around. They've been taking care of people for a lot longer than we have in the West. For thousands and thousands of years, you've got the doctors in India that have been, you know, studying these roots and herbs. And the thing about it is, they still use these roots and herbs in their contemporary medicine. You know, they haven't discarded the things that the John D. Rockefeller medical system did. You know, they're still using turmeric and ginger and ashwagandha and and cordyceps, all the mushrooms. They're using all this stuff, it just every day. You know, it's just in their regular medicine. You know, and you know, I think we need to get back to that. You know, because these medicines, not only, you know, it's You can't see, and I don't think in your country, I don't think pharmaceutical companies can advertise, right?
Not directly. Well, yeah.
Well, they do in the U.S. Okay, they advertise in the U.S. And if you watch medical ads, a pharmaceutical ad in the U.S., it's always. It's always followed up at the end of the ad by a long list of possible side effects. Yeah. So, and it doesn't matter what the drug is, there's going to be a long list of side effects. Yeah. Why would you take something to fix something that's, you know, relatively minor, that could be handled with a root or with a mushroom, you know, it could be taken care of. Like when you're looking at all these side effects, well, it's because we're conditioned. You know, we've been conditioned for so long in the West to, look to our doctor, look to our, you know, get something from the pharmacy, you know, suffer the side effects. And then there's another drug that will help us to deal with the side effects. it's just this matrix of medicine that you start going down. And by the time you're, 75, 80 years old, you look back and you go, wow, I started getting on, one medicine, then two, then three, around the age of, 50. And, by George, now I've got a medicine cabinet full of, I'm taking 25 drugs now. Mm-mm. You don't need to do that. No, don't do that. There's a way around it. No.
Yeah, it's the kind of hope that now we've got technology available. And, even 20 years ago, me talking to you, 3,000 miles apart would have been a difficult thing. And it's the hope that, all those researchers and all those medics now have the ability to get together and, take all the good that's happening, wherever it's happening, basically.
Absolutely. That's right. And as, there's a lot of, like I said, the modern technology has made us busier and more frantic, but there's a lot of good that has come from it as well, like this, being able to share information and those kinds of things. Yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot of Indian doctors that come to the United States, that come over here. So, and I'm admittedly removed from the Western medical community. So I'm not sure if these Indian doctors are bringing their knowledge of herbal medicine to us. I would certainly hope that they are, because that's something we need. The only, there might be an issue, though, legally, if they were, if they were prescribing herbs and minerals and roots and things like that. If they were prescribing those in America, we're such a litigious society here. We'll sue anybody at the drop of a hat for giving us coffee that's too hot.
Well, Steve, it's been absolutely fascinating. The book Brain Health Protocol and Alzheimer's Defense is available here in the UK on Amazon and throughout the world as well. Wish you every success with it. And thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you so much, Pete, for having me. I appreciate it.
Many thanks to Steve. The book Brain Health Protocol and Alzheimer's Defense is out now, and it's a really thought-provoking read. That's it for this time around. Hope you join me again soon for another D-Word podcast.